Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont, who has the evening off with our weekly analysis of national politics featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, but most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, we're featuring commentary by Charles Lipson, retired emeritus professor of political science at the University of Chicago, David Lundy, longtime Democrat activist and strategist and close advisor to Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. Daniel Goldwyn will join us in the 6 o'clock hour. In the first hour, he is the executive director of public affairs for the Jewish United Fund of Greater Chicago, and Adam Angievsky, founder and CEO of OpenTheBooks.com, will join us in the second hour. And both Daniel Goodwin and Adam Angievsky, along with David Lundy and Charles Lipson, and myself, Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont, are going to be talking principally about what happened this week in American higher education. Our program tonight is coming to you from Elk Grove Village, Illinois. It's just outside Chicago, the studios of AM 560, The Answer. Great to be back on the program. Thanks to Bruce for having me sit in. David, you're looking great tonight. Charles, always a pleasure. We got a lot to talk about. I think that this is, it's got to be, for me, a very troubling week. And let's just say that there's a lot that happened this week. There was a lot in court about Trump, both at the trial level and at the level of the United States Supreme Court. There were sort of new poll results that came out this week. President Biden was out throughout the week campaigning around. There are things going on in Congress. There's still a little bit of aftershocks from the passage of the foreign aid measures last weekend. But I think all three of us agree that this is a good night to focus on the educational institutions. But I do want to say to David and Charles, we can get back to some of the other secular political developments later on in the second hour, just if there's something that you want to get into. Let me start off, Charles. You know, rank has its privileges, and you've spent a life, a career in academia. How did you feel this week when you were seeing TV shots from places as diverse as USC and Columbia, with students in the United States of America standing up for Hamas, standing up for Palestinians, such as they are defined by those students, and defying the educational mission of the universities at which many of them appear to be matriculated?
I think the first thing I thought was that there's the positive side. There's nothing wrong with students demonstrating. There's nothing wrong with them taking one side or the other side in a fight between Israel and Palestine or whatever. Where it goes wrong is when they start intimidating other students, when they start yelling vile phrases that are reminiscent of Germany in the 30s, not America in the 2020s, intimidating other students and disrupting classes. It's just so sad. One of the analogies that I thought, or not analogies, similar events, was during the COVID shutdowns of in-person learning in some states, in most states, parents finally got to see what their children in K-12 classrooms were actually getting as an educational curriculum. And many of them were quite appalled by the ideological and political content. And I think that that's what you're seeing with the college demonstrations. Those of us who've been on campus and who've been involved in these issues for many years were not surprised, although I think the level of ferocity has just been awful. But I think we've known about this for a long time. It's the rest of the public that's now seeing it.
David, same question.
You know, I ever since October 7th, when friends ask me how I'm doing, I give them a two part answer. How am I doing? I'm doing great. My life is good. My family's good. My kids are great. How am I as a Jew in America and on planet Earth right now? I have never been more disturbed. And as somebody who has a freshman on a college campus, this issue is obviously I'm very sensitive to it. You know, I look, when I was in college, I was a protester. Okay. I know that will come as a huge shock to you. I find what is happening now so deeply disturbing. I find the ignorance, on display, among most of the protesters, incredibly, problematic. I find the, lack of historical education and context to be, just unacceptable. You know, if this was a campaign by the Russians, they couldn't do any better at creating division and stupidity. One might call these, in spycraft context, these are useful idiots. And I don't mean that among all the kids, but there's a larger agenda here, and these kids are being used. And I think it's, this context is really important. And so while Hamas may be losing the military struggle, they are clearly winning the political war.
Our phone number for comments from you, the listener, is 1-800-723-8289. That is 1-800-723-8289. And we want to hear from you, and we want to hear your reactions, basically your brief reply to the same question that I just asked. We've got about 90 seconds before we go to our first bump, so let me just ask both of you, is there a summer of protest ahead of us that is going to have an impact on the elections in November? We've got a minute, so David, 30 seconds, and then Charles, and then we'll come back after that.
I have been very focused on this exact question, Chris. I am very concerned about what is coming to the DNC and what is coming to Chicago. The entire global left is going to be descending on Chicago, and the question is whether we as a city are up to meeting the moment, and I don't know. I actually had some things that were encouraging over the course of the last week, and we can get to them in the next segment. But will it have a political effect? To be determined.
Charles?
I think the immediate thing that will happen is after students leave campus, there'll be a kind of ebb for a short period, and then it'll come back with the conventions. And I'd like to talk more about them because, like Dave, I've really been focused on this issue, which I think is a big one for both parties and could have an effect in the swing states.
It's Chris Roebling. I'm sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our phone number is 1-800-723-8289. We want to hear from you. We've got Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy on, and we're going to be joined by Daniel Goldwyn in a few minutes, and hopefully by you on a phone call. It's Beyond the Beltway, Sunday evening. Talk to you soon.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by your side.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
It's Sunday evening, and that means Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. My name is Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce. We've got our first caller. It's Eduardo in Tampa, Florida. Eduardo, the floor is yours for a few moments. What is your bottom line point?
Yeah, Chris, thank you. The protests across the nation pose a security threat with all these mass crowds of students, and they also jeopardize the students. And the protests are more ballot outside the correspondents' dinner like last night, where you have the lawmakers and people from journalists and Hollywood gathering for that. That's kind of more of an appropriate target for a protest.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Eduardo. Back to Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy. Eduardo's making the point that these protesters could focus more on folks in power, elected officials, if you will. But we all know that kids in at the University of Southern California are going to protest out there. And Congress is not in Los Angeles, is not in South Central L.A. every day. So I want to get back to this question about David said he wanted to chat some more about what kind of summer we're looking at. And we're going to have Dan Goldwyn on in a few moments. But I am pretty concerned that we're looking at an increase in the incidence of these protests that aren't just expressions of ideas, but also morph into occasions of intimidation and indeed, you know, threatening behavior. David?
Yeah, I've been very mindful of the response of the police and the prosecutors in Chicago. Because at the end of the day, the Secret Service is going to be very focused on what's going on inside the building, but they're not going to be as focused on what's going on outside the building. That is the province of the state's attorney, Kim Fox, and of the Chicago police. And we had some interesting news in the past week, and it's a local story, but it's relevant for the national audience. First off, last week the protesters tried to shut down the road to O'Hare. They also tried to shut down roads downtown. And much to my pleasant surprise, the Chicago police were far more efficient at removing them than police in San Francisco or in New York or Philadelphia. They had the road to O'Hare cleared in an hour and 15 minutes from the moment the protest began to the moment it ended. In San Francisco, that was 5 hours, and New York, it was more than 3 hours. And that is a test. And then the next day, when they tried to shut down Randolph in front of Daley Plaza downtown, they were shut down, removed immediately. I think it may have lasted 10 minutes. And I think that there is an intuitive understanding on the part of the Chicago Police Superintendent, Larry Snelling, and the rank and file, that they need to send a very clear message that this kind of behavior is not going to be acceptable this summer. Now, the problem is, and this is where the protesters win either way, they want the confrontation. Hamas, and forgive me for going back to October 7th, but Hamas attacked to provoke a response.
Right.
And they knew the response they were going to get.
Well, let me, accepting that point there for a second, let me turn over to Charles. You know, David's pointing out success by the Chicago Police Department with respect to clearing protesters. We're asking you not because you're responsible, but because you've been a part of, you know, higher education for your career. What is it at Columbia, for instance, that precludes the president of Columbia from issuing a, you know, 6-word order to the head of security at Columbia to clear that area out and send those people off of the campus and reopen the campus to its stated purpose of teaching, learning, and research?
Well, several things prevent it. One, I'm sure that they don't have enough campus police to actually do it. But, you know, when all those students were arrested at Columbia, they were immediately released. They weren't even charged. Do you know, Dave, what happened in Chicago? Were any of the people charged?
So I do. Unfortunately, the people in downtown were not charged. The people out at O'Hare are going to be charged, because it is my understanding that they did unknowingly committed their protest on federal lands.
Right.
So it is not a
this is really interesting. But at universities all over, except a couple, University of Texas, maybe University of Florida, Vanderbilt, almost none of the students have faced any consequences. I think it was Lenin who said, if you, talking about bayonets, if you feel mush, push. If you feel steel, pull back. And all they feel is mush. So there's going to be more of it. And I don't think it's all outside agitators, but I do think that there's a lot of organization and funding that's coming from the outside. And I think that this is going to be a very troublesome summer. Not immediately, but as soon as the conventions begin, which are in mid-July in Milwaukee, and then in mid-August in Chicago, I think there'll be hell to pay.
Joy in San Diego, California, has called in, and we want to get her on the conversation. Joy, your bottom line point for Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson.
Well, one point is that this is not a new issue. And being someone who has been involved in progressive churches, I think seeing what the plight of Palestinians is has been out there for a long time. And so I think what bothers me versus what I think we're trying to call for in the faith community is, again, ignorance, not awareness of the different roles that each are playing, and like calling for Hamas, cheering if Iran has bombed Israel. The students aren't asking for peace for those civilians who are being killed on both sides.
Right.
And I think as more and more Palestinians, as we were hearing, and I don't know how accurate those numbers are, but when you're hearing into the tens of thousands, because I don't think the protests were like this initially, but as it went into hearing numbers of 32,000, 33,000, we heard humanitarian doctors from different places saying that they're operating on children without any anesthesia. Just as these stories have increased, I think the passion has increased. I don't know what to say about the students who, they need to be educated more as to where are they protesting and not turning towards their fellow students and not putting the anti-Semitic attitude that seems to be coming up right now.
Thank you very much, Joy, for that contribution. The phone number of 1-800-723-8289. We would love to hear from you on Beyond the Beltway. And I want to go to this aspect of the conversation that I think Joy has pointed to. The messaging, I think we've all understand that there has been a long-term involvement of the left with our American higher education. But there seems to me now to be incontrovertible evidence that there's been a very long-term messaging strategy by the folks behind the Palestinian side of this conflict that has, for the first time in my life, put Palestine and agents like Hamas on nearly equal footing in the public conversation in the United States as the state of Israel. Charles, how did this happen? If you can give us a brief view, and then David before the break.
Well, the polling is quite striking. If you look at people under 30, they actually are more sympathetic to the Palestinians. And if you look at those who say they are Democrats or lean Democratic, it's really strong in that group. It's roughly even among the younger Republicans. As you get older, the sympathy for Israel increases, but there is a striking difference. I think that the general idea of identity politics, of dividing the world into the oppressed and the oppressors, and then saying essentially all but the self-identified people of the third world and African Americans are oppressors, and that includes Jews and it includes Israel, that, I think, is the core of the rot.
David.
Yeah, I agree with Charles. I mean, I just want to speak one second, though, to the caller's point. They started protesting against Israel on October 8th. And so, while I guess the intensity has increased, I don't actually think it's related to the what's happening over there as opposed to the duration of the conflict. But look, what's happening over there, this just needs to be said in the 15 seconds we have left, it's horrific. But that was Hamas's intent. Mm-hmm. Hamas mm-hmm. intended the response. Hamas knew Israel would not take the massacre of 1,200 people lying down.
More on this and the entire topic after our upcoming break. And in addition to that, we'll be joined by Daniel Goldwyn. He's the Executive Director of Public Affairs for the Jewish United Fund of Greater Chicago. It's Chris Roebling in for Bruce Dumont, taking a night off from Beyond the Beltway. See you soon.
This is Albert Moeller for Townhall.com. In 1972, Congress passed Title IX. This legislation offered the promise of equity to girls and women in terms of the educational and athletic opportunities previously known only by boys and men. Just last week, President Biden passed by executive action an update to Title IX, inserting the words gender identity to the groups that are a protected class. But understand what this means. If a man claims to be a woman or a girl, he must be treated as a woman or a girl. Biological males who claim to be females will now have the same protections and be included in the same programs that were intended to assist girls and women to achieve equity. Don't believe the government when it tells you that's not going to happen. Let's be clear, you can't have equity for girls and women and support the transgender agenda. You can't do so at the same time. Effectively, the Biden administration has just made a huge declaration. Women and girls, you can kiss Title IX goodbye. I'm Albert Moeller.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It's Sunday night. That's Beyond the Beltway night. And normally Bruce Dumont is in this chair taking the night off. I'm Chris Roebling in his stead. At this point in the program, he always asks the guests to give a little more introduction of themselves. Charles Lipson, what do we need to know about you?
That I'm from Marks, Mississippi, in the heart of the Mississippi Delta, where all the blues comes from. I didn't come to Chicago to play the blues like Muddy Waters. I came to the University of Chicago, where I taught for many years. I'm now an emeritus professor, and I do a lot of writing on political columns. And I'm a good friend of Dave Lundy, who in a number of different contexts has done what I think should be done on college campuses, which is to promote civil discussion among people with sharply different views.
Some of us remember Dave Lundy as a educational, non-commercial FM broadcaster in a higher education setting. That was only 17 years ago. Is that right, David?
You know, Chris, when you start talking about friends who you've had for decades, you know you're old.
Tell us more about Dave Lundy.
Except I will not be using the third person. I run a PR public affairs firm called Aileron. We are focused on supporting the development of clean energy projects and clean energy manufacturing around the country, currently active in about 18 states, also a lobbyist in Springfield, and an FOD friend of Dan Goldwyn.
Let's talk about Dan Goldwyn. He joins us now for this half hour. Thank you, Dan. First time you and I have been on the program together. Give us a little bit about yourself.
I am a friend. I'm at FOD as well, so a friend of Dave, and I'm a guy who really, really wishes I had the voice for radio that Charles has. So I'm a transplant to Chicago in 1995, met David in 1996, and have been living and working in Chicago since then. I am the executive director of public affairs for the Jewish United Fund, Jewish Federation of Chicago, which means I'm responsible for, my team is responsible for our advocacy in Springfield, Washington, D.C., and city halls across northern Chicago on our domestic issues that are important to the Jewish community. And then right now, front and center, are helping to keep the U.S.-Israel relationship strong and making sure that Israel has what it needs when it comes to the friendship with the United States.
Thank you very much. We'll get back to the conversation in just one moment. I want to tell everybody the number is 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. And, of course, the program is available on the radio network right now and at beyondthebeltway.com, at YouTube. I've got it up right now and running. It runs live on YouTube. It's on Facebook. It is on X, or sometimes known as still as Twitter. And our program here in Chicago runs at 10 p.m. So the program we're doing right now goes on tape delay in Chicago from 10 to midnight on WIND AM 560, The Answer. That number again, 1-800-723-8289. Dan, we've already chatted about a couple of things with David and Charles, but I want to give you an opportunity to weigh in from the background that you've described, representing the JUF and Jewish Federation of Greater Chicago in various forums around the state. What did this week mean to you when you saw these demonstrations on these university campuses that were so emphatically for the Palestinian side and indeed on occasion turned into moments of threatening behavior, intimidating behavior, et cetera, with respect to, say, Jewish students and occasionally Jewish professors or staff members at those universities?
Well, thank you for the question. And I'll layer in some really interesting context. I was in Israel until this past Sunday. I flew back, which means I landed in Israel about 18 hours after Iran launched their missile barrage at Israel. I was stuck in JFK waiting for Ben Gurion Airport to reopen. Fortunately, they did. And we made it into Israel. And I spent a week. And we visited the south where Hamas's attack was. And I visited agencies that are helping Israelis recover and rebuild. And there's such a sense of heaviness in Israel that it was also, but at the same point, there's a resiliency and an optimism to go forward. And I left Israel feeling good about where things were, knowing that geopolitically things were in a bad place. But I thought as Israel and Israelis were doing what they needed to do to rebuild. And to walk back and to land back here in this country, and to be faced with people that are taking over college campuses, are waving flags, carrying Hamas's logo, Hezbollah's logo. There was one woman in Colombia holding a sign in front of a group of Jewish students that said Al-Qassam's next targets. That's what Hamas calls their missiles that they fire into Israel. Someone else held up a sign, I'm not sure the location, that said one bullet, one Zionist. So to see what I saw in Israel, the utter destruction, the devastation that happened in the south, and yet the Israeli resiliency to forge ahead and rebuild and recover, and then to come back here and watch a number of students, many of whom I'll frankly just refer to as useful idiots, out there campaigning and beating drums and dancing in circles and living in tents in the middle of a campus, supporting the very organization that killed 1,200, injured over 4,000, kidnapped 250, and continue to commit massive atrocities. We know that rapes are happening right now as we speak. And the fact that these students are out supporting them, it blows my mind away, especially as a father of one student who's a sophomore at one of these universities.
You know, we've got a caller in from Austin, Texas. His name is Alan. And Alan, I wonder if you could join us with your bottom line point for Dan, Charles, and David. He is coming on. Alan, please go ahead. You're on the air.
A peaceful protest. The part of the large demonstration that I saw was not in any way violent or bigoted, anti-Semitic. In fact, there were kids with Israeli flags flying them around, chanting along with these peaceful chants. I mean, they want a free Palestine. And I was down there, no political angle. We have property interests in the area. They were negatively impacted by those George Floyd riots. They're lying about those kids.
So, Alan, just for clarity's sake, I think we missed your first couple of seconds. You're calling us from Austin. Did you see this at the University of Texas in Austin?
I walked over from my office and walked over to Martin Luther King, I believe, the street near the World War One Memorial. Those kids were peaceful. And you know what? There was not a stench of marijuana in the air. And that is unique in this city.
I understand.
It's Alan, unique.
Thank you very much for joining us.
So that I began, if you remember, Chris,
yes,
by saying that what Alan is discussing is perfectly acceptable and indeed a model. I'm assuming he's describing it accurately. I have no reason to think otherwise.
Right.
And if those kind of things happen, that's fine. If the university has rules for or against encampments, just keep the rules, okay? It's when they go beyond that. And what strikes me and what I want to ask Dan Goldwyn about is, what's your sense, and Dave's and yours too, Chris, about why support for the Palestinians and maybe even opposition to Israel has morphed into this open anti-Semitism, which is something we really haven't seen except from the right, the Ku Klux Klan and so forth. We just haven't seen that in America. This seems quite different to me.
We've got a minute 40 until the break. So, Dan, why don't you take a first? Give us a minute on that. David, you and you two split that minute, and then we'll come back after.
Sure. You know, I think, unfortunately, Charles, it's always been there. It's just now they've got license to be louder and more clear about it. Let's be like the most obvious case of this is when students chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That means that's talking about the eradication of Jews, the eradication of the state of Israel between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. For years, Palestinian protesters have tried to say this is an innocuous thing. It doesn't mean this, except for the fact it's in the Hamas charter. That is their whole purpose. So I think what they have now is a certain license to be louder and more direct and clear about it than they have been. And we're doing a better job of amplifying and making sure people understand that.
David.
Yeah, I mean, I look, I the caller's point was that he witnessed a protest that was respectful, that was peaceful, that was focused squarely on the issue of what's going on with the Palestinians. And I know that that's happening in various places. It's happening on my son Eli's campus out at Claremont McKenna College in outside of LA. Unfortunately, that is not the only thing going on out there. And the reflexive anti-Semitism is popping up all over the place.
Yeah,
it is popping up on the left. Sorry, we're out of time.
No, I'm absolutely shocked. And I thank Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson and Dan Goldwyn. We're going to rejoin them in a few minutes. Sunday night, Beyond the Beltway night. Bruce Dumont's taking the evening off. It's Chris Roebling sitting in. And we'll be with you after these words.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
Today, millions of people all across America are building a life in recovery from addiction and mental illness, helping themselves.
And helping each other, with friends, family, and community lending their strength and support.
Join the Voices for Recovery.
Together, we are stronger.
For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral for mental and substance use disorders, for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's Sunday evening. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. Very pleased to be joined by Dan Goldwyn from the Jewish United Fund and Jewish Federation of Greater Chicago, Dave Lundy, longtime Democrat activist based here in Chicago, and Charles Lipson, professor emeritus at the University of Chicago. We're going to be getting into the next hour, and we're going to hear from Adam Andrzejewski, who is the founder and CEO of OpenTheBooks.com. But let's take a second here. I want to go to Dan and ask about the sources, let's just say the sources of the anti-Semitism, and therefore what the Jewish community is beginning to think about to turn this around. Obviously, what we're seeing has taken years to percolate to this point. But what are you already hearing about how this gets turned around?
Well, it's going to be a slow process. It's a little bit of turning the proverbial aircraft carrier. And I'll give you an example of what it is we're up against. So keep in mind, the Jewish community in Chicago, we're about 320,000, 350,000 people in Chicago. So about 2% of the population for the metropolitan Chicago area. So we're always going to be fighting against a tide of much bigger numbers than we can actually bring to bear. And so I'll just take an example of what's happening right now as we speak, 10 to 7 Chicago time. So there are two busloads of people, activists, heading from Chicago down to Champaign-Urbana. These are they're organized by Students for Justice in Palestine to go help organize and create a brand new encampment at the University of Illinois. Now, what's critical about this is this means this is not organic. This is not students just coming together at U of I to protest what they believe in. People are now being bussed in. So where's that money coming from? They're getting tents to build up these encampments. Where's that money coming from? They've got signs. They've got flags. They've got access to social media. Where's all of that money coming from? And meanwhile, you've got a small Jewish population, it's a decent-sized Jewish population at the University of Illinois. And what are they being told by authorities is to stay away. And so far, that's the best answer we can give, because we have two busloads of people coming down. We have a University of Illinois Police Department that's going to be overwhelmed by the sheer numbers. Luckily, the local government, the state government, everybody has been on board and wanting to do the right thing and keep everybody safe. But as was mentioned before, I think by Dave or Charles, is that you've got rules in place on campuses. You have to enforce those rules. Now, we have every reason to believe that Chancellor Jones at the University of Illinois is going to enforce those rules. But that's just an example of one campus at one time that is seeing significant resources poured into it from the outside to foment problems on the inside. And that's, again, we're a tiny piece of this population here in Illinois. How we are, how we fight that, it's a slow process.
Charles Lipson, are we going to see from the University of Illinois greater resolve about following the rules and preventing intimidation than we may have seen at the Ivies or the near Ivies?
I think that, first of all, we just don't know, but they would be an outlier if they did, if they enforced the rules. I don't know who the prosecutors and so forth are down there, but if people do violate the rules and they are taken off campus, will they be charged? Will people photograph them so that potential future employers will know what kind of people they might be hiring? I think that these are all very serious problems, and I would say universities have failed. And I would say that universities are in the midst of a great meltdown. You can see it over the DEI programs that they supported for many years and which have now essentially been ruled illegal and that they're trying to hang on to. The president of Columbia, I think, had one published paper. It was based on a co-authored piece. In fact, it completely took the co-authored piece and just put her name on it. People like this should never have been appointed to leadership positions. I think Columbia is going to be the crux of everything. As long as the two greatest universities, NYU and Columbia, in the one of the two media capitals of the United States are in complete meltdown, then it's really hard to restore order elsewhere.
And David, what are the pressures, in your opinion? What are the pressures on the kids? Are there pressures on the kids to participate? Are there pressures on the kids to go out there and break the rules? What are the countervailing pressures that students are encountering, to the best of your knowledge?
You know, I really think it so depends on the campus. As I've mentioned, the experience that my son has had at Claremont McKenna, he walks around with a Jewish star. My kid loves debating and getting into dialogue, and he walks right up to people who are, and he's a proud Zionist. He, like me, has enormous problems with the current government of Israel. But he'll walk right up to the protesters, and they'll have a civil dialogue, and it's been fantastic. Unfortunately, I think that is the exception, not the rule. And I think that there is a social pressure to join the protests. I think that there's look, kids by their nature, kids root for the underdog. They always have and they always will. And to the point that Charles made earlier about oppressor and oppressed. And Israel is perceived as the oppressor and the Palestinians are perceived as the oppressed. And so it's not surprising that it is getting kids' attention in an organic way. The question is, who is pushing this and, you know, who is stimulating it?
Questions that I want to get into in the next hour with Adam Andrzejewski from Open the Books. But right now we say thank you to Dan Goldwyn from the Jewish United Fund of Greater Chicago for joining us. And we say thank you to all of you listeners. Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson are going to join me again in the next hour, and we look forward to seeing you then. And we'll be right back after these words. Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you.
Sunday evening means Beyond the Beltway. Usually it means Bruce Dumont. He's taking the night off. My name's Chris Roebling, and I'm sitting in very proudly. Thank you, Bruce. Joined this evening by old friends Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson. And for this segment, we're joined by Adam Andrzejewski, founder and CEO of OpenTheBooks.com. Adam, thanks for coming on. And full disclosure, Adam and I work together on some of the things that Open the Books is proud to do. But we are having Adam on tonight, not because of that, but because he's got a report out about the Ivies and about their funding sources. In this segment, we've got about 7.5 minutes to go. I want to make a really important point before we get to Adam and the conversation, and that is Bruce has been very fair about bringing on folks who speak from a Palestinian standpoint and folks who speak from an Israeli standpoint. And sometimes he's had Israelis who disagree with Israel, and sometimes he's had Palestinians who disagree with the Palestinian Authority or with Hamas. This program this evening is really not about the underlying dispute between the two sides. This conversation is really about the rise of anti-Semitism and perhaps the betrayal of the Enlightenment by American higher education. And that gets us back to Adam. Adam, your reports recently have focused on funding, and I wonder if you're able to give us a frame by which, say, listeners out there can understand a little bit more about who is funding Columbia and the other Ivies, and how did you find that out?
So, Chris, it's you and I. It's the American taxpayer. So I think many people are disturbed at what they're seeing on their televisions, what amounts to moral rot at some of our most elite institutions in this entire country in higher education. I think they're going to be more alarmed to find out that they're actually funding it. So at OpenTheBooks.com, after the 10/7 attacks last fall, we took a look at the most recent five-year period, from 2018 through 2022, at the eight schools of the Ivy League, plus Northwestern and Stanford. And here's what we found. We found that these elite schools now are more federal contractor than they are educator. And here's what I mean by that. They accept more money, and they get more money, contracts and grants, than what they receive on undergraduate student tuition. So look, Congress has a big stake in holding these institutions accountable because Congress is appropriating the money. So over these 10 schools over a five-year period, amazingly, they collected $33 billion from taxpayers. That's with a B, $33 billion. At the same time, their massive endowments increased by $65 billion. So just think about that. For every dollar they collected from taxpayers, $2 in the equivalent was stuffed into their endowments on gain.
So you're saying that they're making more money from federal contracts than from educating undergraduates?
That's right. And the folks leading these protests on university campuses, it's just hitting the news. A piece of tablet at the Wall Street Journal, Alan Dershowitz on his podcast. Many of these are actually, they're not domestic students, they're foreign students. They're paying full freight. So while the American taxpayer is stuffing these universities full of federal dollars on contracts and grants, the dollars that are coming on student tuition, like at MIT, one out of every three of them are actually coming in from students who are paying full freight and by and large, leading these protests and participating in them.
All right. Four minutes in this segment. Dave Lundy, does this lead, and, you know, we've been avoiding partisan politics. I think that you and Charles and I might get to that in the next half hour. But does Adam's point about federal funding lead to the possibility of political accountability?
Honestly, I'm not sure I understand the point. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, Adam. I get that universities have wanted foreign students because foreign students pay full freight, period. My son pays full freight, so I understand the motivation of universities. I don't know what that has to do with federal funding, though. And so I'm not sure I'm not trying to follow any logical connection there.
Yeah, let's just follow the money into the American elite university today. So they're getting more federal dollars on contracts and grants for supposed research, and we can kind of break that down in some of the frivolous grants. Like Columbia, you know, they took $3.5 million to decolonize the geosciences, the earth sciences, like the study of the atmosphere and biology. They think it's too white and too European-centric. So you've got the federal flow of funds into contracts and grants, which is enormous and dwarfs the amount of undergraduate student tuition. You break down the student tuition number, and like at MIT, a third of it is funded with foreign students.
So, well, let's, for political accountability, let's just focus on the federal, and we're not going to hold the foreign parents accountable. But I wonder, Charles Lipson, you know, to what extent folks know that these universities have become basically providers to the federal government. I mean, that's a very significant part of their institutional presence now.
First, I would say that a lot of American institutions have essentially been taken over by the federal government. It's not unique to universities. America was always differentiated from Europe by having a vibrant civil society, but we've seen more and more sort of squeezing out by government intervention. I would differentiate. There may be some grants in the sciences that are really questionable. I don't doubt that. But the money that goes into basic scientific research is great for our country, much needed. And in fact, the people who started that in the aftermath of World War II did that in a way that was designed not to make it a political pork barrel where a senator from Iowa and a senator from Illinois divvied it up. It would be based on merit-based grants from wherever the universities were. The universities scrape off about half of all of the money that comes into, let's say, a physicist to do her research. And that just goes into the university's general budget. So there are problems, to be sure. And the problems became very pronounced in the foreign language programs. The U.S. has an interest in promoting learning of foreign language, but many of those became just sinkholes for ideology, especially in the Middle East programs.
I guess, go ahead, Adam, 20 seconds.
Just to respond to that. Today in the university, you know, at the federal grant level, what you have is the universities for their research taking the federal taxpayer money. Then from private donors, they're stuffing their endowments with the private sector money. They're not spending that. Their endowments are going through the roof. They need to lighten the load on the American taxpayer.
It's our phone number is 1-800-723-8289. The only thing that would make this program better is you joining it. So give us a call, 800-723-8289. It's Chris Roebling with Adam Angievsky, David Lundy, and Charles Lipson on Beyond the Beltway, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We'll be back after these words.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay. Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back with you. It's Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. We've been talking about the universities of America. Have they betrayed the country by allowing this sort of, I would say, extremely intimidating threatening protests on their grounds? And Adam Andrzejewski of Open the Books joins us and has talked about the amount of federal funding that has gone to the universities. And I wonder if the federal funding does not enable people like, say, Congress or people like, say, the Secretary of Education, were he so inclined, although I'm not at all sure that he is, to say to the universities, we are picking up much of your tab. You need to do better about preserving civil society on your very campuses. Is that outlandish, Dave Lundy?
You know, I don't know that it's outlandish. I guess part of what I'm struggling with is, as I understand it, and Adam, please correct me if I'm wrong, universities raise money from federal grants to fund specific things. So they raise money to fund research. They raise money to fund, you know, a lab in the sciences. They medical research, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no doubt that your report is correct, that there's billions of dollars going into these universities. I don't know that gives the federal government an opportunity to say, and therefore, because we fund these programs, we have a right to tell you how to run your university. I do think that there's a different issue here, as we talked about in the first segment, about keeping Jewish kids safe on campus, about civil dialogue, civil discourse. But do we want the federal government telling private universities what to do on that front? I don't know. It seems like a difficult position.
So I think what gives Congress license to issue some oversight here and to come up with some rules is that I think here's a principle, here's a rule that we can all agree on. Not one single tax dollar should go into an entity that promotes, coddles, bigotry, discrimination, or anti-Semitism. And that's what we're seeing on the campuses today. So Congress certainly has a role here with a massive amount of federal funding. And I want to put that federal funding in context because it's so significant. The last time we did this report, it led in 2017 to the first ever tax, the 1.4% tax on excessive endowments. Our oversight was cited by the Boston Globe as the impetus for Congress and the president to take action. In that study, we found that the eight schools of an Ivy League over a six-year period collected more money on federal contracts and grants and student aid than 16 states received from Washington in congressional appropriated aid. So these massive elite universities, they are soaking up a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars.
Charles Lipson, is it unrealistic to believe that the federal government has a purchase upon which to insist on, say, greater adherence to principles of free speech and non-intervention and non-threatening behavior because of its the extent to which it's funding these universities?
Well, to the extent that any taxpayer money is going anywhere, there's a right and a responsibility for oversight. Whether or not that oversight would go too far in the wrong direction is a serious question, because just look at our Congress. The fact is, what I would like to see Congress do is take issues that are widely agreed upon: the safety of all students, neutrality in the classroom, those kinds of issues, and insist that universities live up to their legal responsibilities and regulatory responsibilities on those kinds of issues.
You know, I think, I don't know if it was Adam or one, somebody mentioned Dershowitz, a retired, similar to Charles, an emeritus professor. He from Harvard in the law school, Alan Dershowitz. Dershowitz had a statement out yesterday or today, perhaps, I think it was yesterday, that the folks behind the university administrations that are sort of shepherding these demonstrations, such as they are folks out of the DEI offices of the elite universities. And these are the diversity, equity, and inclusion offices that are themselves becoming more and more significant as, you know, part of the administrative complex above or over the educational, the teaching and the learning and the research.
I want to comment on that,
yeah,
Chris.
Go ahead.
That is true, but it understates the problem.
Okay.
The problem actually in the administrations of many universities is that the administrators are very far to the left. And as a result of that, they've been part of the problem rather than part of the solution, and many of them have been unwilling to support free speech on campus because they don't like what the speech is. But I would say that you're seeing a kind of emerging cleavage between red states and blue states on this, because red states are putting in place, at least in public universities, laws and funding and funding budgets to wipe out the DEI departments. The only question will be, are those people then reallocated to other departments where they do the same thing under a different name? We didn't talk about it in the last session, but Dan Goldwyn has said that some of the funding that's coming from the Middle East and going illegally, going to certain foundations in the U.S. and then being rechanneled, those were found illegal, had to be dismantled, and then new ones were set up in the same location with the same officers, just a different name, same operation. So we need to make sure that doesn't happen on campus either.
Dave Lundy, is DEI somewhat captured, or is it pirated off into areas that, you know, a liberal such as yourself would not want to see it? Wait, We might have lost audio on David Lundy.
Sorry, I had muted myself when I was coughing. There's definitely excesses in the DEI space that I have great levels of discomfort with. But I just think that going back to Charles's point, I think the problem in university campuses is far beyond a DEI officer or two or three. I mean, what we saw at Columbia University, what we've seen in other universities, where these once upon a time, protests from students were protests from students.
Right.
To the best of my knowledge, at Kent State, there weren't professors who got shot along with the students. It was the student-led protests. And it seems to me that in places like Columbia and some of these other universities, it's the professors who are leading the students, not the other way around. And that's just really messed up, because they're not teaching them history. They're not giving them accurate context. It's all being spoken out of this weird ideological context. I know you're focused on the DEI question, and what I see is way beyond DEI.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Andrzejewski, it's been great having you on this segment. We've got 2 minutes. Please give us your thoughts here before we thank you.
Yeah. So many people wonder why the tepid response from the universities, against these protests, which are extreme. They're calling for the genocide of Jews, the destruction of Israel. And I think it goes back to the salient question that Elise Stefanik asked famously in the House hearing to the Harvard president, the MIT president, the UPenn president. Two of them lost their jobs over their response. They could not answer the question, if somebody called for the genocide of Jews, does that violate your policy on bullying? Well, now we have that exact situation happening at Columbia and other universities, and you see the tepid response from the administration. So does it violate or not? Well, many of them are led by these foreign students that are paying full freight and comprise a large portion of their budget. So to bring the conversation full circle is that these universities have actually provided a platform for this hateful anti-Israel, anti-Jewish hate speech. And they know that these people violate the rules on speech, but they are not enforcing the rules because these kids are here on an educational visa. If they enforce the rules, they lose the visa. The university loses the money.
It is worth noting, sorry, one very quick thing.
Sure.
And far be it for me to ever defend Columbia for what they've been doing. They did just expel that one kid who called for attacks on Jews. The kid who later tried to apologize for it. They actually expelled him. And I found that encouraging.
Yeah.
I'm sort of stunned that a president of an Ivy League university, after what Adam refers to, wouldn't act decisively when confronted by this encampment on the university lawn, which all of us, I'm sure, have visited. We've all seen. It's one of the majestic places of American higher education. And you just cannot explain it. Thank you, Adam Andrzejewski, and thank you, listener. It's Chris Roebling. Our number is 1-800-723-8289, and we want to hear from you beyond the Beltway Sunday night. We'll be back after these words.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide, available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
Chris Roebling in for Bruce Dumont. It's Beyond the Beltway. Good to be with you this Sunday evening. Good to be with Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy. And we certainly appreciate Adam Andrzejewski and Daniel Goldwyn for having dropped by. So let's talk about politics here for a second. Let's just talk about the state of the race here and how the campaign for president is going. Obviously, every week we get into greater areas of terra incognita. I mean, we've never had a former president tried in a criminal trial, and that's going on right now in New York City. But poll results indicate that it isn't having a terrible effect on Trump's support. And at the same time, we've got President Biden, who seems dedicated to the proposition of reading everything that is in front of him on the teleprompter, whether it makes sense for the listeners at home or not. So let's just get a look at the race here and handicap where things are and what might be the most important issues in the months to come. David, how is Biden doing?
Oh, Chris, I feel great. I feel great about how Biden is doing. Charles will tell you, because he's heard me say this for months, all the bedwetting among Democrats I thought was completely pointless and a waste of effort. I think that Joe, it's so funny because for years, Republicans wanted to try to convince people that Joe Biden was sleepy Joe. He was campaigning from his basement. He wouldn't get out there. He had no energy. And everybody expected him to fall over on his face and start drooling in the middle of the State of the Union. Instead, he got out there and gave an incredibly vigorous speech, whether you agree with what he said or not. The response from the right was that actually Donald Trump himself accused Joe Biden of being on cocaine and that he was coked up during the State of the Union. The funny thing, though, for a guy who's Mr. Sleepy Guy and not in control, he has been doing campaign event after campaign event, rally after rally after rally. He's been all over the country. He's gotten support from labor unions that previously supported Trump. I think that the campaign is going great.
Okay.
And they are, and one last point, I have said all along that I thought that RFK Jr. was a bigger threat to Trump than he was to Biden. And clearly the Trump people are starting to agree, because Don Jr. has gone on a major rant attacking RFK Jr. They wanted RFK in this race, and now they are regretting it.
Charles, do you want to critically evaluate David's assertions there, or should I?
I think David is on cocaine.
It sounds like you're going to do the critical evaluation.
Dave, you ignorant slut. most of our audience is too young to remember that from Saturday Night Live. But I just want to say that I think on issue after issue, there are problems for all Democrats and especially for Biden. But he has a huge lead on abortion or reproductive rights. And for some voters, I know you see polls that say that's the sixth or seventh most important issue. I think that's misleading. I think for a number of voters, it's the issue, and they will vote on that issue alone. And I think that Trump has not come up with a very good answer, because I don't think that the answer, just leave it up to the states, is enough when some states are putting in very stringent rules that most voters don't agree with. I want to say that there are two things that have come up in the past week that I think will hurt the incumbent president. And one are all the campus issues that we've talked about, because I think the Democratic Party is much more closely associated with universities and much more closely associated with the left, which is where the problems are coming from. They're also the incumbent party, and the incumbent party is usually held responsible for disorder. But the second thing is the prospect of stagflation. There was very low growth in the last report, and inflation is still not nearly so high as it was, but it's over 3% in the core numbers. It's above what the Fed wants. So normally they would raise interest rates, but they can't do that if growth is this low. So they're really caught between the dog and the hydrant on this one. And so I think those are the two big new issues that create problems, I would say, in both cases for Democrats, although I would say that some of the abortion issues that have come up recently are a problem for Republicans.
There's no question that abortion is a problem for Republicans, and it is determinative for a segment of the voting population. There's no question about that either. And Republicans are not going to get those votes. And there's no way that at this point, I don't think there's any way that any Republican is going to get those votes. But having said that, we continue. What we see on the college campuses, I think, is being understood as a disordered situation and an unusual situation to the average voter sitting at home, who may not be up to speed on the latest of Hamas or Hezbollah or Iran or the Houthis or Israel's response or diplomacy with the Saudis or the Qataris. So, but they see it and they say, this is not the way things are supposed to be, number one. Number two, I think that then echoes concerns that are pretty broadly expressed about immigration and about the border and about national security.
Oh, yeah.
And we have these events, whether they're, crime events or national security events or just overall release of figures and a cabinet member getting impeached, even though I know that David's going to say that's entirely political, but it actually happened. So I think there are some areas in which, while Biden is campaigning and he hasn't fallen on his face, the bottom hasn't fallen out, he is making it to events. But David, I think you also have to recognize, you've got to concede, he can show up at a fast food restaurant and look a little bit on the lonely side, whereas you've got Donald Trump, before he goes to his criminal trial, is showing up at a work site. And he's surrounded by hard hats, and they're all cheering him on, saying, this is our guy. That's a core constituency for the Democrats which does not seem to be adhering to home right now.
Chris, let me give you two numbers that I want you to think about. One, 240,000. That's how many fewer donors Donald Trump has this year. Let me give you another number, 180,000. That's how many numbers that Nikki Haley got in the last Republican primary. Donald Trump has a major problem with the Republican Party and with his base. And it's a far bigger problem than Joe Biden does with the Democrats. And look, the reality is, and this is really interesting, Joe Biden has consistently been under-polling. He under-polled in 2020. He under-polled in 21, 22, 23, 24. Democrats have under-polled. Republicans have over-polled. And yet in elections, when there are special election after special election or the midterms or Kentucky, Democrats have been significantly outperforming their poll numbers. And so any Republican that is looking at the current neck and neck polls, and by the way, there's been significant movement towards Biden other than the CNN poll that came out today. But anybody who's looking at those and feeling comforted by them is not really paying attention to history. And it's really interesting. If you ask people, what are the most important issues in the country? You will get one set of answers. And if you ask people, what are the most important issues for you to what you will vote on? You get a different set of answers. And I think that you know, I don't want to bash pollsters, but I don't think they've quite figured this out yet. And I think the voters have done a better job.
Charles, it sounded to me like David didn't want to talk about the Democrat answer on, say, immigration, which is a pretty big issue.
Oh, no, I'm happy to. Joe Biden and the Democrats got behind a bipartisan solution that conservative Republican James Lankford put forth in the Senate. And even Mitch McConnell said this was killed because of Donald Trump, not because of the Democrats, not because of Joe Biden.
Well, I agree with that point. But it's worth remembering. I agree with that point, Dave. But it's worth remembering that 7 million or so people came in illegally before that issue came up. I do think it's a big issue, and I do think it's created a particular problem that we can see in places like Chicago, which is that it has pitted African Americans, a very strong constituency for Democrats, against the Biden administration and against local administrations who are having to devote a lot of money to dealing with these immigrant issues. And it also pits them against these new immigrants in the job market. So I do think that there is a cleavage there. We just don't know. I think the black swan here is whether there will be any of the people who are the gotaways, and they're huge numbers, any of them will do something, a major terrorist event that could change the complexion of the election.
David, 20 seconds before we go.
Well, I think that Charles hit on something that is absolutely important, and I agree with him. The immigration situation with the migrants has pitted Latinos against African Americans, which is a problem for Democrats.
It's Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our final segment is coming up right after these words. Stick with us.
I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Sunday evening, Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. It's Chris Roebling sitting in. Bruce has the evening off. All right, David and Charles. David, what's one thing that you worry about with respect to Biden? And Charles, what are the pitfalls that are still in front of Trump, although he seems to be a little bit Teflon these days? David, you first. And we've only got 6.5 minutes here.
Yeah, I think for Biden, I'm concerned about what is going to happen in Chicago. And to your point, disorder never benefits the incumbent, never, ever, ever. So I definitely have meaningful concerns about that. And I'm glad that Chicago is in August. The convention is in August and the election is in November. It's a lot of time to kind of get over that. And then obviously, look, I would be lying if I didn't say every day Biden goes out on the stage, you pray he doesn't trip and fall. because, you know, it will be that will be Fox News 24/7, 365. And it doesn't matter that Donald Trump fell down the stage or couldn't walk up the stage or uses two hands to drink a bottle of water or can't put a coherent thought together and keeps garbling words. Nobody's going to care about that. They're just focused on Biden.
Charles?
I want to agree with the last thing that Dave said. There is a lot of focus on Biden, but I think it's overall, it's a negative election. It's who do you hate more? There will be positive votes. There is a strong pro-Trump group, and there are a number of Democrats, of course, who are strongly in favor of Biden. But I think that this election will be decided in 7 swing states by who the median voters hate the most. And I think that the big issue for Trump is avoiding the kind of very high profile, controversial statements that just alienate people who, on the whole, might like his policies, but are not going to vote for him personally. And I think that that's a serious problem. And I must say he's been much more disciplined this time. And oddly enough, he's been helped by being kept off the campaign trail. He gets these nightly press conferences that he does after court. I think if he is convicted, that will be a problem, even if people think that it was unfair. I think so far it's helped him. I think they think that these are unfair prosecutions. But there's a deference to juries, and if the juries convict somebody, that's a problem, even if those convictions are later overturned because of procedural or other problems.
Yeah, the lawfare strategy against Trump is it grinds on, and whereas this week's Supreme Court hearing on immunity sounds like it might end up delaying that case, there are so many other cases out there in which Trump can be actually ensnared, okay, not to say convicted. And goodness, I mean, we're all so far into terra incognita right now. Goodness only knows how voters are going to react.
I thought the most interesting statement, Chris, the most interesting statement was Clarence Thomas's statement that he didn't think Jack Smith was appointed in a legal way. And the reason that that was, besides being true, the reason that that was so interesting is that it would give the court a way of not deciding these very vexed issues. I think it'll be sent back down to another court, and that will delay it, as you just said. But and I think that he's just been very fortunate in having a prosecutor like Alvin Bragg and a prosecutor like Fani Willis. These people are just such obvious political hacks and not all that competent either.
David?
Well, I'm not going to defend Fani Willis and the single dumbest bit of a judgment I have ever seen, deciding she should get involved with one of her prosecutors on a case that was only going to be looked at by everybody on the freaking planet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Talk about operating under a microscope. That mm-hmm. having been said, the truth is that I haven't been looking at the legal strategy as an opportunity for how we're going to win this election. I think we're going to win this election based on the merits. And I think that Donald Trump has got problems. That having been said, I think he's highly likely to get convicted in this case, in this New York case. It was the case I wanted brought the least. And yet Donald Trump got lucky when he drew Judge Cannon down in Florida. She's done everything humanly possible to delay the documents case. And the Supreme Court, helped out with delaying the arguments on the immunity case. I think that there's zero chance that those cases go forward. And those are the ones that, A, he's likely to get convicted of. B, they really matter because it involves national security.
Less than a minute. Let's round this out. David and then Charles, will these demonstrations play any role in the outcome in November?
I honestly don't know. I really don't know. What's interesting is that I view these demonstrations a little bit like I view Twitter. The loudest voices are not necessarily the people who actually vote.
Okay. Charles?
I think it will play a role on the general grounds of disorder, and because I think universities are associated with the Democrats. But I think a lot will depend upon whether there is disorder in the autumn.
Got it. Thank you, Charles Lipson. Thank you, Dave Lundy. Thank you also in absentia to Adam Angievsky and our friend Daniel Goldwyn from JUF. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in this evening for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. We also want to acknowledge WIND AM 560 The Answer, where the program gets taped. Genevieve Productions, it is a production of Genevieve Productions. And also Fritz Goldman, producer, who wrangled us all onto the air and into the cyber world for your enjoyment this evening. And that's it from Chicago.